This is tape number one of the morning of January the 31st, the President Noyes Hillman present. And we're going to go back now to continue with the questions about the presidents. And I think Dave here has lined up a number of questions about Woodrow Wilson.
All right. Well, we sort of talked about it yesterday, Mr. President. And Woodrow Wilson, according to your estimation of him, occupies an enormous place in our history. And should we start with Woodrow Wilson's coming to the presidency, under what conditions? What were the conditions of the country?
He came to the presidency after an administration that hadn't been a very strong one. And his idea was, of course, due to the fact that he's written a history of the United States, was to set up a program that would continue the ideals of the Constitution of the United States, and that's what he did. The first thing he did, among the first things he did, was to set up a Federal Trade Commission, which affected the international program of the United States. And then his effort was to restore the control of the financial program of the United States to the capital of Washington, where it ought to be. And that was his the Federal Reserve Board, which he set up, and he made a very, very strong statement on that subject. Well, now, before he could get through with his program, which contained a great many other things, if you read his first message to Congress, came about by the fact that we were forced into the World War I. And he had difficulty with that. But when the time came, when peace was about to be brought about, his great speech on the 14 points was one of the documents that will always live in history, because his statements in those 14 points, outside the ones that were at the time necessary for the peace of the world, set out the fact that in the League of Nations and in the United Nations, he was on the right track.
Now, Wilson was trying to make the legislation more responsive to the will of the people.
Wait a minute.
Coming of Wilson was hailed as the age of liberalism, recapturing the executive position of the country. Was he a liberal in every sense of the word?
I think Wilson was a common sense liberal. I don't like these synthetic liberals who are always talking liberalism and who act some other way. I think Wilson was one of the great liberals.
Now, there's a statement in some of these volumes that defines our kind of liberalism as the protection of what is an essentially conservative form of government. Is that true, sir?
Yes. Yes. The so-called conservatives are always going back to special privilege. And when the liberals get after them strongly enough, then they amend their ideas in a manner which will keep the country in the right groove.
He stirred up the Congress and the people in a way that hadn't happened for quite some time, with not only his gift of eloquence, but with his sense of high regard for the function of the government in favor of the vast majority of the people, which up to that time it hadn't
currently fully carried out.
Now, that's true. Theodore Roosevelt, in his administration, previous to Taft, had made an endeavor in that line, but he didn't succeed. And the reason he didn't succeed was because the majority at that time were in the hands of the people who believed in special privilege. So when Theodore Roosevelt broke up the Republican Party and caused the election of Woodrow Wilson, then Wilson proceeded along the line about which he'd written in his History of the United States.
Well, Mr. President, here's an interesting reminder that Woodrow Wilson, when he wrote his Ph.D. at Johns Hopkins, said that our Constitution, state and national, created a vacuum which the bosses had rushed in to fill. In Europe, the executive and the legislature are one and the same thing, and here they are separate, with no one authorized to direct or lead the entire government. Consequently, said Wilson, the headless affair in Washington and in every state capital had fallen under an unauthorized, irresponsible bossism of one kind or another. Now, therefore, the author contended that a governor or president, as the only official known and responsible to all the people, should lead, not leaving the job to some hidden party machine or managing politicians in the secret control of selfish private interests. And he got his first opportunity to prove what he meant when he became governor of New Jersey.
And he found that it wouldn't work, and so did the bosses, in order to get reelected.
That's interesting. Would you develop that? Because that seems to...
In other words, he couldn't separate himself from the bosses?
Well, of course he couldn't, because the so-called bosses are people who understand the political situation from the ground up. And Wilson had to then make his peace with the bosses in order to be reelected, and he'd never been nominated if the bosses at the Democratic Convention at the time when he was to be nominated hadn't been in control of certain parts of the organization which would nominate him. But the parts that he was fighting were against him, and that was a good thing.
In other words, academically, when he talked about this vacuum, nevertheless, he did believe in a governor or a president taking leadership to bring about
things. Well, of course, and the leadership had to have an organization behind him, or it wouldn't work.
Now, would you develop the nature of the political organization that you're talking about? Because there are political leaders called bosses who are either bad or corrupt or who are good.
Well, yes, that's well. But when it becomes necessary to organize a program politically, you've got to have men behind you who know people, who know how to get along with people, and who can get those people to support the man for whom they want to work.
How about those bosses or political leaders who are working against the interests of the people, who are exploiting the people? What about them?
Well, I'm not so sure that that's true. I don't think most of them have to exploit the welfare of the people if they can't keep in power.
That's all right. Go on.
Go ahead.
Okay. Sit over here and cry.
You were saying that there were no exploited bosses in political leaderships locally who work against the interests of people.
Well, that's substantially true. Of course, once in a while you have one who tries to become too big for his britches, and he's usually thrown out in a very short time.
Well, how about the Tweeds and the Thompsons and all such, and Pendergast, as they have you to?
That was a different period. And Pendergast was not the kind of boss. And whenever a man wanted to do right, he'd support him to do right.
Sometimes, of course, sometimes when there was an organization that wanted to get both private underhand,
he found a man.
He found a man.
He found a man.
who want to do right. He always supported the executive.
Wickedness under a certain amount of wickedness under every political system, no matter where. So
that's
that
true.
It's not.
That's true. No question about that. No question about that. No question about that. Don't make any difference what kind of a political system it is. You take the great do-gooder leaders in New York, went just as wrong as the political bosses whom they were fighting.
But in the long run, they're found out, exposed, and eliminated, so that
the
cleansing
run.
Process goes on all the time.
All the time, and that's part of the game. That's part of the setup of the free government that we have.
Now, Mr. Wilson embraced a man like Colonel House.
Smith. Smith was his worst man, the boss of New Jersey.
Oh, I see. Haig was?
Smith. Smith was his greatest. Smith was one of the men he had to throw over. And, of course, he took on House because House had been a friend of his, and he thought he could trust him. And he did to a certain extent, then he had to.
Well, House was supposed to be a combination of the administrator and Wilson lean on him very heavily, not only during the war years, but prior to those years.
You're saying he leaned on him, or you're asking whether he leaned on him?
I'm making it a statement, Mr. President.
Well, a man in that position has to have somebody he can trust. And Wilson thought he could trust House. And he did to a certain extent. But when House came to the point where he thought he was greater than the president, then the president had to pull the rug from under him and let him go. Just like every president has to do with some of his confidence.
Well, now, what is the role of an outsider who is taken into the confidence over and above the very important group of people that the president surrounds himself with as his personal staff?
Well, he's supposed to be in a position where he can give the president information that the president is not in a position otherwise to get. And when it becomes, comes to the point where he thinks he is the president, then the president has to pull the rug from under him and get rid of him, just like Wilson did House.
Is that in the nature of the presidency, that every president has someone on the outside giving him contact with the outside world?
He has to have, because he's got to have information from every direction. And in order to have that information, he's got to have people on the outside who can give it to him.
Isn't that a dangerous thing?
No, it isn't, because the president's always in control.
May I ask this? Dave, you're emphasizing the role of Colonel House. Many writers don't. He played a very mysterious and dramatic figure at the time. A man who was as equally important, I suppose, in this council was Colonel Harvey, the editor of the magazine.
Right. That's right.
It's weekly.
And both of them exploited their positions, not for the benefit of the president, but for their own benefit. And every president has to have somebody who will give him information on which he can rely that he can't get otherwise.
This is the end of tape one, the morning of January 31st. This is tape two, the morning of January 31st, 1961. Well, we're talking about the influence of outside people on the government and the presidency.
Specially designated people who have the role of being the confidential outside contact between the president and the outside world.
Well, the president has to have information from every line that it's possible to get him. And there are people in whom the president has confidence that break that confidence and cause him trouble. But at the same time, most of them have been able to give the president information that he otherwise wouldn't get. And it doesn't have any real effect on the final policy of the president, because when he has a program to put through
He wants to get every section of the country in line so he can understand what effect it will have. And when he finds one of his confidants that he's taken in from the outside who are not doing the right thing, they're usually fired, just like Wilson did with Howard. Now go ahead.
Well,
you see what I'm getting at. I've had them. I had plenty of them. They didn't affect me at all.
Well, you use them to get another point of view, was that
to
it?
To get a viewpoint. And then to make up my mind on all the reports that were made to me by the people on the inside who wanted to please me.
But since they bring you information which you normally don't discount, then in a sense they do influence you when they bring you that information.
Not very much. Not very much.
Well, in the case of Colonel House, and Bill brings up Harvey, who was another very important figure in them.
In the long run, it didn't influence Wilson in his final decision on things.
Well, here's a summary of Woodrow Wilson saying the electric spark was omitted from Wilson's composition. And this omission denied him a flowing communication with his fellows, a natural limitation which was set by his lack of physical vitality and confirmed by the life he led until he was suddenly thrust into the hurly-burly of politics. His isolation, his impersonal leadership, chilled the emotions of the people even when their minds approved his policies and admired his abilities, nor did he have a cabinet which could supply the lacking element of popularity. His was a lonely figure in the White House. He came to the presidency a stranger to public men, and no president can make new friends, real friends. He can only make psychopaths.
Well, that comes about due to the fact that he never pulled a precinct in his life, and he didn't have anything to do with the ordinary fundamental basis of what makes politics. Politics is government. Politics is an ability to get along with people. And Wilson didn't have anybody who was down on the ground with the people, and just what you've been reading shows it very conclusively.
Well, actually, the Democratic Party at that time had been out of power so long that it didn't have people that he'd call on. What did he have? Franklin Lane, he had McAdoo, and one more person in his cabinet who were at all familiar with the
he didn't pay any attention to either one of those people you mentioned.
William Jennings Bryan was another one.
Yeah. Well, Bryan could have given him some very strong and well-founded information. But he had listened to the newspaper reports on Bryan, and he couldn't entirely understand what Bryan stood for. And had it not been for Bryan, there would have been no liberal program continued in the United States.
Under Wilson?
Under Wilson or anybody else.
Are you now saying that Bryan was the stimulant?
Was the stimulant for the so-called liberal program, which finally came into effect with Franklin Roosevelt 12 or 14 years after.
In other words, you say that Bryan, although he held no office, of course he held office as Secretary of State for a time under Wilson.
And he soon quit because he couldn't get along.
Although he held no office, was as much responsible as anybody for the atmosphere which made a liberal program
possible. There's no question about it. You see, Bryan was in a class by himself in 1896, and Grover Cleveland, who was then President of the United States, couldn't agree with him. And Grover Cleveland was one of these backward-looking conservatives, although he was a great president in his first administration. And Bryan was the man who was in front for the welfare of the common everyday man who didn't have any representative. And in the long run, his program, financially and every other way, came into effect when Woodrow Wilson put his program into effect in the Federal Reserve Board. The idea was to arrange things so there'd be enough circulating medium so the ordinary man could carry on his program. That's all Bryan wanted.
Well, there was also agricultural reform, and there were labor reforms.
That's
there were all kinds of reforms.
That's
but
right.
Child labor reform.
Well, they
That's right, to head them off.
Keep well, but they didn't apply any of that except to the Maritime and a few other places where they had the eight-hour day and
That's right.
But the you say this mostly was the result of the influence exerted by William Jennings
that's
Bryan.
That's correct. That's absolutely
now,
correct.
I'd like to re-ask that question. Dave says this was mostly due to that. Well, that would sort of eliminate any will or any feeling about the matter on Wilson's part.
No, Wilson was smart enough to take over the things that were right in what Bryan wanted to do and put them into effect, and that's what he did with the Federal Reserve Board.
Well, the parting of Bryan with Wilson was brought on by a disagreement on foreign policy where Wilson was tending towards intervention and Bryan wanted to stay out.
Well, no, that didn't happen until the war came on. Wilson was along with Bryan until the time came when it was necessary for him to meet the situation. When he was forced into the war in the First World War, when the time came, he had to do it. After all the foolishness that the Germans performed, which forced him to do it. But before that, he had gone along with Bryan 100%.
Well, Wilson was trying hard to keep us out of it, and it did take a highly neutralist position.
And so was Bryan. They were both on the same side on that subject. But when the time came, when the sovereignty and the welfare of the United States came into effect, Wilson did the right thing.
Well, now, the period of Wilson also involved us in a change of very important policy with respect to our neighbors. We were now getting away from our so-called imperialist position or expansionist position, and we were pulling in our horns and definitely stopping all expansion, were we not?
Yes, but then Wilson's policy in Mexico. Wilson's policy in Mexico was one of the things that we had to live down for a long time.
Well,
intervention in Mexico.
That's right.
Well, actually, that involved the dislodgement of a
intervention
Diaz,
in Haiti
wasn't it?
And Nicaragua and a half a dozen other places. It all took place under Wilson.
Well, because they went kind of wild on internal policies, weren't paying
well,
their debts and all kinds of things.
Well, we were looking after the investments that the economic royalists had in those countries.
Well, in the case of Mexico, that was a dictatorship that involved Diaz, wasn't it? Where we had
Juarez.
J-U-A-R-E-C.
And he was there for about 35 years as a dictator.
Well, no. The trouble with Mexico was brought about by Huerta, who overthrew the liberal president of Mexico at that time. His name wasn't Juarez. He
Madero?
Was successor. Madero.
Madero, yes.
And Madero was assassinated a short time after that, and Wilson didn't approve of that.
Well, you made a statement that we were in a way trying to preserve the American interest in Mexico.
That's right. And in Nicaragua and in Haiti at the same time.
So
what is your feeling about such a policy, sir?
Well, that's policy of the past. Policy of the past. Now we've got enough people. See, now all of us have got people to listen to reason and do what's right. And to do what's right by the people who have investments there.
You don't then, do you?
Well, it had to be done at that time. And you can't tell what is a good policy unless you were in charge at that time. And Wilson was in charge. And he did what he thought was right, and I supported him.
But you feel that this doesn't quite square, though, with his progressivism and...
I think it does. A man has, when he's president of the United States, he has to meet situations as they come up and make no difference what the so-called liberals want him to stand for. He's got to work for the welfare. He's got to work. He's got to work for the welfare and benefit of the standing.
Find him a kind of a Yankee imperialist order that...
No, I don't think so. Not with people who analyze the situation.
And as you analyze it, no problem.
No.
What particular thing are you talking about, Dave? What particular
where were
thing?
Where were you
supposed to
occupy
the army?
Veracruz.
America.
And to Nicaragua and to Haiti. But
that needed to be done at the time. Conditions have changed, except in Cuba.
Well, we were then in possession of Cuba at the time that he came.
No, we weren't. Cuba was a free republic at that time, and so were the Philippines.
So when did Cuba get its freedom?
Right away.
Well, then...
Well, let's look it up and be sure.
Yes,
right.
All right. Now, then in order to get a true perspective of Woodrow Wilson, he was liberal in your sense of the word. But
that's
he was
right.
For the people.
He was a common sense liberal. He wasn't one of these synthetic yelling liberals. He was a liberal who was for the welfare of all the people around in our neighborhood.
And he did pick up a good deal of the slack that had developed in the economy and in the government of the people, so that a good many adjustments came during his administration that needed to be made.
That's true. And in the long run, Mexico became one of our best friends, and so did these other countries about which you've been talking. But Wilson had the right idea on the welfare of the world as a whole. He had an awful time putting it over and didn't succeed.
Well, we'll get to the kind of the war and the consequences in another chapter here, but you have rated him as one of the very greatest presidents.
One of the five or six great presidents.
And do you mean his domestic performance or his performance as a war leader?
Both. It took both. If he hadn't had the right domestic performance, he couldn't have been a world leader.
Yes, and that's exemplified in the fact that later historians point out that if the Federal Reserve Act hadn't been enacted, the United States could not have financed the First World War.
That's true. Absolutely true.
But he brought to the presidency something that no other president had had before him or since. Would that be your judgment?
No other president had before him. I wouldn't say or since.
You would not say that?
No. I think Roosevelt tried to continue the program that Wilson started in the Organization of the United Nations.
Now what did you mean specifically, Dave, that he brought something to the president?
Well, a drive for legislation and a drive for enactment of many measures that brought relief to many segments of our economy who were exposed to exploitation up to his time.
Well, you see, since 1892 until 1912, we'd had a backward-looking program in regard to the welfare of the country and the world.
This is the end of tape 2, the morning of January 31st, 1961.